Welcome to Press Start, Game Development and How to Become One. I'm Adam Arisa Smita, CEO of Arsanesia and Vice President of Indonesia Game Association, will be your host for this episode. In this podcast, we will talk about game development and how to start your career as a game developer. We will invite experts from the game industry to tell us their game dev journey to inspire us. I hope this podcast can help you start to be a game developer. And this podcast is brought to you by Indonesia Game Association and Goethe Institute Jakarta. And today we're having a special guest from Germany, Irene. Hi, Irene.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. It's really nice having you here. Before we start our chit-chat, could you please give us a quick introduction about yourself, where you're working right now, and what's your role in the game industry? Okay, yes. Go ahead, Irene.
Thank you, Adam. So I'm Irene Preuss. I'm actually from Spain, but I've been living in Germany for 8 years. I'm currently marketing manager at Happy Broccoli Games, an indie studio based in Berlin. And I've been in the games industry for the last 4 years, always here, based here in Berlin, and I'm mainly in roles in business development, marketing, and event management.
All right, nice. Now, before we start our podcast, we will start with a quick game to know you a little bit more. Don't worry, these are rapid questions, and there is no right or wrong answer. You just answer with anything you pop up in your mind first. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. First question. If you can go inside a world in a game, which game do you pick?
I would pick Oxenfree.
Why is that?
I really like the mystery island and like solving mysteries, yeah.
All right, nice. All right, next question. What is the longest game that you play?
I think probably Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was a very long
game. How many
game.
Hours, if you can recall? Like, it's
For sure, at least 100, maybe like 130.
Yes, that's a really great game. All right, next question. What is the most interesting game event that you ever attended or organized?
I think I would say Amaze in Berlin. I attended a few times and it's just such an interesting experience. It's not really a game event. I don't know what it is exactly. Nobody knows. But it's such a fun event and I hope that we can go there in person again. Although the online version was also a lot of fun. We were walking around as flamingos. It was really exciting.
Yes, we already have like maybe a fourth episode with a Germany speaker also in this podcast, and most of them gave a good testimony regarding the Amaze, and that make me like when this Corona thing is already done, I think this is that will be the first game event that I'm gonna go.
Yeah.
All right. So, regarding that subject, next question: what is the first thing that you want to do after Corona pandemic?
I'll probably hug a lot of friends, and I want to hop on a plane and go to Japan.
Go to Japan? That's random. Why?
I've never been. I always dreamed of going, and now I can't go. So, like, as soon as this is over, I think it's one of my first destinations.
Nice, nice. All right, this is the last question. What subject that you learn from school or maybe your university that is very useful in your career in the game industry right now?
Good question. I never liked math, and I'm not good at math, so I'm not going to say math. Yeah, maybe something more like history, because I like to see the context and the cultural references in games when it comes to history or literature or something like that. That I find that really interesting always to get the historical reference of the names.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's nice. All right, that's the end of our rapid question. So there's not the winner or the loser, so you don't need to worry. All right. So, Irene, in the podcast, we would like to talk about your journey in the video industry. Most of our audience or listener is new or maybe just want to start in the game industry. And maybe your journey or story can inspire all of us to start our game development career. So for starter, for the first question that I would like to ask you is, do you remember when was the first time that you want to work in the game industry and what is the trigger?
To be honest, I think I always wanted to work in games. It was one of those dreams that I never actually thought was possible. It was just like, mm-hmm. Like a fantasy almost. I've always played games and it was when I came to Berlin the first time that I realized, okay, actually, I see that there are a lot of game companies in the city and maybe I can be in one of them. Like I never actually before I thought I had the possibility. And now I feel with the boom of indie scene, it's so much easier to enter the games industry. And I mean, the industry in general is growing so much that there are so many opportunities out there. So I would say coming to Berlin was my inspiration.
And what is the reason? You mentioned you from Spain, right? And you moved to Berlin. What is the reason that you moved to Berlin?
So I have family in Germany, in Münster. It's a town in the west of Germany. And I always dreamed of living there because it's a really pretty city. And I lived there for 3 years. After I finished university in Spain, I moved there for 3 years. And then, it's quite small. So I decided to move to Berlin, which is much more fun and big and an actual city. So, that was 4.5 years ago.
I see. I agree with you. Berlin is very, very beautiful. I've been there once and I like it so much. And yeah. And after you move to Berlin and that you see all the ecosystem in there, what is your first stepping stone? I mean, did you apply to a game studio or do you make your own game studio? And what is your first job in the game industry?
So I applied to a bunch of jobs, games and non-games, but I finally got a job at the localization studio. Called Faltagram in Berlin, and I applied as a project manager, but they hired me for a business developer. And actually, I'm really grateful to have taken this job because it opened my doors to meet hundreds and thousands of people. Because it's a job where you're going to events and meeting potential clients, and I did a lot of networks thanks to this job.
That's very interesting because in our country, in Indonesia, I think there's not that many or that common to have an office with focus and specialize in localization. Maybe can you a little bit explain to us about what is your company do and what is the localization means usually?
Yes, of course. Basically, it's a translation or adapting the video games to the different markets and the different languages. Not only the text, the in-game, the dialogues, but also the store pages, the ads, and also, for example, the voiceover. We had a voiceover booth, so like a studio for the actors that would come and record the voices in German, for example. And also there's testing involved. So it's called LQA, localization QA. So that means that once the translations are implemented into the game, a tester is playing the game and making sure that the letters and the alphabet is looking good in the screen. Because as you know, there are some alphabets that go from left to right, some from right to left. So if you're just changing it without looking at how it's going to look in the screen, it can be a bit, it doesn't always look right. So that's what we did in this company. When I started, we were pretty like relatively small, 30 people. Mm-hmm. I think now, I mean, they're like 80 or 90. They're grown quite a lot. Yeah.
And is the language is only for Germany or many other language?
No, we had in-house, we had like 8 languages, English, Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, simplified, Korean. But we also worked with freelance translators who were based in their mm-hmm. native country. So we worked with Brazilian, Portuguese, Mexican Spanish, or Arabic, and so on. We had, I think, around 30 languages that we could offer.
I see. From your experience back then, how effective is doing a localization rather than use just English as a language? Because English is a global language, like everyone understand it. And what's the reason that some game company need to localize into a specific language?
So it really depends on the scope of the game and the budget. Mm-hmm. But I would say for a small studio, it is really important to do a market research and see mm-hmm. for this kind of game, which countries it's going to sell better. So for example, for an anime game, we know that in Asia, it's selling quite well, or in France, in Europe. So instead of doing 30 languages, I would say mm-hmm. it's better to focus on 3 or 4 at the beginning. If that goes well and the game has more budget, then you can look into translating for more languages. On another hand, it's important as well, what kind of game is it? If it's like a small mobile game with almost no words, then it's really mm-hmm. not so necessary to translate the game. It really depends if it's going to hinder the experience, if the player cannot understand what's happening, or is it a very heavy text narrative game, then yeah, probably it's better to translate it if you really want more players to play it.
I see. All right. So yeah, that really makes sense. So if you want to make a game and at first use English, and if you have a specific country that have a language that is only in their country, I think it's also better to translate into the country, and that will boost the download and the engagement with the players, right?
Yes, exactly. And it's also good for marketing. Like the press might be able to pick up your game if it's translated, mm-hmm. you know, the local press. So you have more chances to get more promotion if the game is translated. I always recommend if you can't afford translating the full game, at least do the demo or do the store page, so you can already get analysis how many visits you're getting from the country. If you see that one country is performing better, then you can invest more in that country.
I see. That's really interesting. All right. So, Irene, that's your first career in the game industry, right? And after that, what's next?
So, after working there for 2 years, I started working as head of Berlin Baltic Nordic, which is
Berlin Baltic Nordic.
It's an initiative funded by the Berlin Senate Department, so the Berlin government, and the European Union, with the goal to connect the Berlin games industry around Europe.
Okay.
So basically,
nice.
Yeah, it was really interesting as well to meet and help so many people in the games industry. I mean, I was traveling every 2 weeks. I was going to different countries, so it was quite intense.
Really?
But I learned so much. And some of the activities we did was organizing booths. Huh? So we had the booth with 5 indies at Nordic Game in Malmo. We had also booth with 5 indies at GIG in Poland, one of the largest events in Europe. We also organized like investors dinner, so we connected the video game companies with investors. We did interviews, posted articles on our website, and Yeah, basically the goal is to make the Berlin games industry more European, so that the Europeans come to Berlin and the Berliner studios go out to Europe and make business connections.
I see. That's really, really interesting. Because you get insight on how the other ecosystem around the Europe is running. And in your opinion, in a lot of different countries that you already visited, how is the ecosystem in German and especially in Berlin compared to the other country?
It's really different, I would say, city to city. Berlin has a really good balance, I would say, of indies and AAA companies. And I think that it's a dynamic that fits each other kind of, because there's the AAA companies attract a lot of talent, and then the talent gets involved into the indie scene. Some of the people might start their own studio or join a studio, or some just participate in activities, but there's a really interesting dynamic between the big ones and the small ones that I think that is making Berlin very creative and very it has a very strong scene, both AAA and indie. And then when you go to different countries in Europe, I think they're all quite different. Like the Nordics are quite techy. Like Finland is very techy. There's a lot of startups. So, and then there's a lot of mobile, like, you know, the inheritance of Nokia, and then Rovio with Angry Birds. All of that's still quite strong over there. And then Sweden has a really strong industry as well, with really big AAA, really big mid-sized studios, and really like big important indie studios. So I would really say every country in Europe, every market has a complete different scene, and I think it's interesting to go to one event every time to see how it works over there. And luckily in Europe it's quite easy to travel around, so
yes,
we have that that luck here. Except right now with Corona, obviously, but normally.
Sure, of course. But from your story, that I heard that in most of the country with game ecosystem right there, they have some kind of like the big anchor, like the big player who maybe shape the ecosystem in their country or the city. Did you ever visit a country or city that did not have that big player in their city and still thrive?
I did definitely visit cities that didn't have a big player. Like I would say Poznan, which is a city that borders, it's in Poland, but it borders Germany. It's 2 hours from Berlin. And I don't think there are any large studios there. However, there's a really big indie collective. And there's like, I don't know, 10 really successful indie studios. And I don't know exactly how it started, but I know, I mean, there's a really big event in Poznan for indies, but also for larger companies. Called Geek Games Industry Conference. And I'm not sure which one came first, if the Indie Collective or the Geek. But I think there's a connection there for sure. And I think that even if you don't have a AAA company in your city, you can still manage to have a successful indie scene by organizing events and activities that will make people attracted to come over and participate and meet other people.
That's really, really interesting, because I'm going to share a little bit about the condition in Indonesia right now. The thing is, the game industry is really, really new and it's really young, and there hasn't been any AAA company opening their office in Indonesia yet. So most of the company is still like in the size of indie. Maybe only one company from Indonesia have like more than 100. But other than that is like maybe like 20, 10, 5 people making games. That's why I'm really interested. Like, is there any case where a country or a city can grow also without the presence of any other big company? And that you mentioned that this is something that happened in Poland, right?
Yeah. Well, Poland has the CD Projekt Red, obviously. Really big company. But they are in a different part of the country. Poland is a huge, huge country. So I'm not sure it really had an influence in the Poznan in this scene, to be honest. But I'm not from there, so I can't tell 100% for sure.
Yeah, that's really inspiring because that you mentioned the presence of like events and indies, it also can grow the ecosystem even though without the big player, right?
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So that's when you work at the Berlin Baltic Nordic. Well, are you still like working there right now, even though there's a pandemic, or how is the situation right now?
No, I'm not working there anymore. Actually, since 1 year, since the pandemic started, but it was a coincidence. The project it's funded by the government, so it was coming to an end. You know, like a yearly contract kind of thing. And so I decided to look for something different. I know that now they've restarted. They have a new team and it's called GamesNet Berlin Europe. And I know they're doing a lot of online stuff like podcasts and interviews. And there are plans for the future. I know for events, but right now it's all a bit on hold.
Are they the same organizer who organized Amaze?
No, it's not. But I think we've participated with Amaze in the past, organizing like a workshop or some small event within Amaze.
Interesting. All right. So after that, now you're working at the Happy Broccoli Games.
Yes.
Well, first, I interview one guy from Munich, the guy who made Shadow Tactics. The studio name is Mimimi.
Yes.
And it's very uncommon. And when I heard that your studio is Happy Broccoli Games, could you maybe elaborate what's the meaning behind the name?
Well, so I think that the name is inspired by one of the characters in our game, which is a broccoli girl. She's a schoolgirl who is a broccoli, and she's a bit whining all the time. So she's not so really happy in the game. But Annika, she's the studio founder, and she chose his name for the game. And I think it's great because it really drives a lot of attention, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true. Because it's very, very unique to have broccoli as a name of your studio. And your role there is a marketing manager, right?
That's right, yes.
Can you please, this is something also really, really interesting for our listener, because most of indie who wants to start their company usually come from the programming side or maybe artist side or maybe designer side, and they want to make a games, but after they create a games, if they can finish the game also, of course, they don't have any clue regarding the marketing, regarding how the business work, and it's already too late for them to, usually the marketing research is on the front. But on your studio, you have a role, especially for the marketing manager. Can you maybe tell a little bit to us what's your responsibility and your work over there usually?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mainly take care of social media. So I manage Twitter, Instagram, and also manage the Discord community. And also made sure that we're signed up for all the important events on Steam. Like right now, there's not so many physical events, so we're trying to go to sign up for as many Steam events as possible. Of course, the goal, the game is not out yet, so the goal is to to get as many wishlists as possible on Steam. So I also manage Imgur and Reddit, for example. We have the, I think it's quite important for an indie studio to post there like once a week, more or less. And then on the other hand, also managing the funding strategy. So looking a little bit, how can we fund the studio in the future? Looking at different options, doing market research. What are the different markets where we feel our game is going to be stronger? What are the different genres that we identified with, and with what are our competitors or similar games, and what can we learn from them? So these are some of the things I'm mostly busy with.
And this also is some, but that's already a lot.
And I forgot something really important: the merchandising.
What is it?
Or we got some Broccoli Girl plushies. We got some Broccoli Girl stickers and pins. So researching all of these, finding the right providers, it was quite a hard job, to be honest. So if you're making a game and programming and making art, and then on top you have to take care of all of this, I can see it could be a bit overwhelming.
Yes, true. Wow, that's a lot of thing. And I hope we have time to talk about it one by one, because I think that's very, very interesting topic to discuss regarding how to do that. All kind of job, but maybe I will start with the managing the social media. You mentioned you have a Twitter, Instagram, and so Reddit and everything. How do you usually plan your social media content? Is it usually, you said you mentioned like once a week, but it's in every platform, right? So you also need to engage with them. How do you usually plan that? Do you have like a schedule, or do you have like maybe like event or live streaming, something like that with the audience? How do you usually manage the audience in the social media?
So I usually on Mondays, I make a plan for the week. And for Twitter, okay. I post like 3-4 times a week, and then Instagram a little bit less. And then I have like, I try to make diverse topics. So I'm not always sharing a screenshot, because I want to engage with the audience. So maybe I and then I have labels. So I have like, on Monday, I'm going to talk about a new character in the game. On Tuesday, I'm going to talk about a new feature in the game. And then on Wednesday, I'm going to talk about the team. So behind the scenes. And then on Thursday, I'm going to talk about some news or something new we want to share. And then on Saturday, we always do a screenshot Saturday. So I pick up a nice GIF. I make a GIF and so it looks pretty, so people want to share it. So I try to not make it repetitive. That I think is very important. And I use color labels. So if there's a lot of colors, it means that it's very diverse, right? And then for Reddit and Imgur, it's quite tricky platforms, to be honest. I'm still learning how to use them. And usually I do it once a week, and I try to pick a nice looking image or video or screenshot, or GIF. And a short title that makes people want to see more. Like
I see.
And
continue.
Yeah, and regarding the live streams, we have done a couple. Usually during big announcements, we had the publisher announcement in January, and so we used the opportunity to do a live stream of the demo. And also a Q&A live stream on Steam. And I think that's
on
also,
Steam.
Yes. So a lot of that brought us a lot of new fans. Was really, really interesting to do. And we're planning to do more in the future for other announcements or events. Can't say though.
Wow, that's really back. How do you manage that? Oh my God, I cannot imagine. Irene, between all of the platform that you mentioned, there's a Twitter, there's a Reddit, Instagram, Steam. Which platform do you think the most effective? If like maybe a small indie company who doesn't have a dedicated marketing manager to manage, if they can only have like choose or pick one platform for them to manage, which one do you think is the most effective?
I would say Twitter. My experience, but it's really important to make sure you're not just catering to one group, because Twitter is usually used by all indie developers, and sometimes it could be that your followers are only indie developers and indie developers talking to indie developers, and it's important to get out. That's really good, obviously, you need to make sure to look to a broader audience and try to find fans in different areas. Like for example, we're working with voice actors for the games, so we like to tag them, and the voice actors reshare or retweet our posts, and then we get a lot of new fans from their fan base. And so trying to reach as many people as possible by trying to find topics that are relevant to your game, but are not directly in the game development.
I see. All
right. So find topics in your game that maybe if it's a history or a politics game, then maybe you can move towards that direction. Or if it's a game that has a specific art style, like in our case, we use pixel art and anime, so we're always trying to tag the pixel art or anime hashtags so that people who like this kind of art style and maybe are not so into indie game development can follow us.
I see. That's smart, because usually game developers share their works in the group of a game developer.
Yeah.
So it's nice to make it also to a broader audience so they can get more insightful data regarding who's going to play their game, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And usually, how do you do the research? Like you mentioned, the game is anime and pixel art. Is that a decision based on marketing research, or is there something that you guys really want to do? Then you create that, and then you try to find, is there a market for that game? How usually the marketing research works and impact the game itself?
Yeah, so when it comes to the art, and that this is Annika, she made the game. She started on by herself 2 or 3 years ago, and she made the game by herself during those first 2 years. And that was her vision. That was her idea. She just wanted to make a game. And then, it started to get a bit of traction, and she was able to hire Johnny, who's the programmer, and then later on myself. And so basically we're making the game we want to make. I use the different like the unique selling points kind of to do the research. So I said, okay, we have these two specific art styles. What other games have this similar art style? Or what other games? So, the game, for example, can I do a little description of the game?
Yes, of course.
To give the audience a bit of an idea what the game is about.
All right.
So the game is called Kraken Academy. And you play as a new kid in a new school that is a bit run down and falling apart. And you get time travel powers from a magical kraken. And the goal is for you to save the school. You have to meet all the different characters, solve mysteries, explore, and ultimately save the school. And it's inspired by 90s comedy anime like Ranma and Dr. Slump.
Ah, right.
So it's a bit bizarre, the humor.
Yeah.
I would say it has a little bit of Undertale tones with the pixel art, the bizarre exploration game, plus the anime illustrations that pop up when you have a dialogue with one of the characters. Mm-hmm. So this is quite unique, and I did research what other games do this combination, or what games do one or the other, and what games do talk about time travel or like time loop, what games talk about doom and destruction, or which games have this bizarre comedy undertones. So I made an Excel sheet with all the games, like a list, and then I researched when were they released, how much money do they cost on Steam, how many copies they sold, or how many comments they have on Steam, and you can calculate more or less depending on the comments on Steam how much the game sold, and then what languages they localized into. Then looking at as well as their social media, how they manage their marketing strategy, and try to learn from them. And then, I mean, of course, there's like hundreds of games you can put on this. So I would say pick five or six that are the most similar ones, and look into them in detail.
And then after you get the game that is similar to your games, what do you do with it? I mean, do you try to engage with the same user base with that game or something like that?
Yes and no. I mean, what I do is look at their social media of this game, and see how the social media is managed. Try to learn from them, and then when it comes to posting, for example, on Reddit or Imgur, I also look at what these games have done before, and I might write something like, I'm working this game which is similar to this game, or if there's like subreddit that is dedicated to a game or a genre, I might post a game in there. It doesn't always work out, but I think especially with Reddit and Imgur, it's important to keep trying, and you know, eventually one of the posts it's going to do really well, and don't give up if it doesn't happen all the time, because it's a bit of a luck situation.
Yep. I see. That really, really a great tip. So for all the listeners, I think you can also try to do that when you maybe in the middle of the creation or maybe prototyping, you can create a game and then you can make a list of the games like Irene mentioned. And then you can study the how they marketing the game, how they promote the game, how the result from the game, like how many comment and copies, something like that. I think that's very, very great and important tips for you guys. And Irene, you also mentioned that you also in charge for the funding strategy. I think funding is also quite hard in Indonesia right now to get funding from game. How do you fund your game, or maybe like most of the community in Berlin and European, maybe is it easy for you guys to find funding for games?
Yes. So in Germany, we get a lot of help from the state. We have in Berlin, we have a regional funding called Medienbord Berlin-Brandenburg, which funds up to 50% of prototypes and full production. And most of the indies in Berlin are using this, and it's really a great help to have. And then additionally, since 2019, we have a state funding from the from the central government in Germany, which is also giving 50% for game production, and this one is non-refundable, which is really, really great.
Do you have to refund from the Berlin?
Yes. So once the game is out and is selling, then you have to return the money with no interest, though. And it's, but it's really helpful. A lot of studios have become successful thanks to this funding. And the one in from the central government is quite new. It's now been up for 2 years, so. But it's starting to pick up as well, and it's also really, really important to have this kind of help here in Germany. And on the other hand, we do take care of funding together as a team at Happy Broccoli Games. And one of the, so actually, we found an investor thanks to this Berlin Baltic Nordic, where I used to work earlier. One of the activities, I invited an investor to come to Berlin and decided to invest on Happy Broccoli Games. And, for the Kraken Academy, the current game we're working on now. So thanks to this local, initiative, also funded by the Berlin government, we got an investor. So it was really, really, helpful. And then on the other hand, we are looking now for the next games, what we want to do. I mean, I can't say much more, but, we're looking, you know, what are the different options, and depending on if we want to do government funding or publisher or investor. I mean, it's a bit early to know right now, but there's different options here. It's quite good.
I see. So from your story, there's a two or maybe three kind of funding, right? From the government, from the investor, and the other one that is usually happening is from the publisher. Do you think there's any like which one is the best or like pro con between each kind of funding?
Yeah, of course. If I would say when you get the pros of working with the government funding is you get total freedom to do what you want to do, and you you have to do all the applications. So that would be the cons, that it's a lot of paperwork and sometimes, especially in Germany. I mean, the bureaucracy is crazy. But, sometimes you can't start with the game until you have the approval of the government, and that can take a long time. So it is, and then you don't have to, there's no, in our case or in Germany, you don't have to, there's no interest. So that's also a pro. And when it comes to investor or publisher, there might be like, the contracts might be a little bit less, free, like with the government, you might have to pay interest or like, you might have to pay a percentage, for the whole lifetime of the game. But that also depends really case to case. Every publisher, every investor has their own, contracts and their own rules. So I think it's super important before signing anything to compare contracts, to talk to all of the developers that they've worked with, do online research. That is super important. And make sure you find the right one and not just sign the first contract because you really need the money. I think that's really important. But the good thing about working with a publisher, for sure, is the help and the getting the support. And the publisher has a great network, knows all the press, knows all the events. So it's going to be much easier to enter events and award shows if you're working with a publisher, because they already know everybody. And it gives you credibility as well. If you have on your Steam page the name of a publisher, and people are going to know, okay, this is for real. This is, this is going to be a good game, because I know this publisher has usually really good games, right? So if you're working solo or with the government grant only, you might not have that kind of exposure that you have working with an investor or a publisher.
That is interesting. By the way, you mentioned about when you're reading the contract or want to work with a publisher or investor, try to do research and talk about all of the developers who has worked with the publisher or investor before. How is the situation of the community of indie game developers in Berlin? Is it like, are they very open to share, or are they like doing everything on their own and not sharing with each other? How is the ecosystem, like the vibe in the indie in Berlin?
So I would say it's really open. And mostly everybody's on Twitter, and everybody's, well, most indies in Berlin are sharing everything on Twitter, from their programming learnings to their development strategies to things about publishers and contracts. I mean, of course, what you can't share, you don't share, but I think like, I feel very comfortable asking almost any developer in Berlin if I have a question, or if there's something that you know, I know they've done before, and maybe they can help me out. It's really an open community, and we all really help each other out.
Is there any community or like meetup or gathering that usually happening in Berlin that you can have a drink with fellow indie game developers before pandemic?
Yes, there's so many activities happening here. Oh. Obviously, right now it's a bit different, but until 1 year ago, there was one of the main events in Berlin. It was called Talk and Play, organized by Lorenzo Piglia and Masha Camino. Mm. And it was a really great event. It's basically, as the name says it, it's talks. So at the beginning, it's like talks, usually like 5 minute hyper talks.
5 minutes?
Yes. So to keep it interesting, to keep it short, the very short talks about any topic in the indie industry, from narrative design to like more technical topics to marketing strategies. But it was super interesting every time. Then after this,
in 5 minutes?
Yeah, in 5 minutes.
Is that possible?
Well, it keeps the audience more engaged, right?
Wow.
Because sometimes if someone is talking for an hour, after 20 minutes, you just want to go to sleep sometimes. with the 5 minute talks, it keeps you on alert the whole time. It's really, really fun way to do it. And then after the hyper talks, we had the opportunity to go on stage, and present our game, or present a new trailer, or make an announcement. So all the indies could go up on stage and basically show something new. And this was once every 2 months. So basically it was the opportunity to show what you've been working on. And then.
Nice. Wow, that's really good.
And finally, after all the talks, they would remove all the chairs, put tables, and you could put your laptop there and show your game to the world and get feedback, do some playtesting, and meet new people. So this was super essential event in Berlin.
Wow, that's really awesome. Interesting. I think this is something that we can also try to do. We can copy the format, especially the 5 minute talks. How many speakers usually in that 5 minutes? What you said? Hyper talk?
Hyper talk. Yes. I think it was usually two hyper talks only. So like 10 minutes with like 5 minutes in between, so 15 minutes, and then like half an hour or 45 minutes of the presentations of the games.
I see. And so the main event is like the last part when you get to play others' games and get feedback and connected, right? I think that will be the most interesting part of the event.
Yeah. So I think that was the longest part, yes. And you could walk around. There was a bar, so you could get a beer or a drink and then walk around, network. You don't have to play games. You can just be there and meet your friends or meet new people. But I always, every time I've been there, and I've been many times, every time I met like at least 5 or 6 new people. and they've been working the games industry since forever, and I never met them before. It's like such an interesting place to... Yeah, it was such a good event that everybody was always going there. And I recommend it for any in the community to have something like this.
Yes, yes. I think that's very, very good. Do you have any like estimation, like how many in this company or Oplus big company in Berlin? Like how big is the ecosystem?
I would say around like, I don't know, I would say somewhere between 50 and 80 maybe in the companies in Berlin. I think so. There's companies that have 15 employees and companies that are just one person. Or companies that are like one employee is here, one is in Spain, one is in the UK. And so I guess that also counts for sure. I think it's quite big in Berlin.
And how many big company or AAA companies in Berlin?
The large companies?
Yes, the large companies.
There's also quite a lot. We have Ubisoft, King, Huge Games, Nauga, Wargaming. So I would say like maybe 30. Also including like large mobile companies.
I see. And how the communication? I mean, like, is the big company also join the event that you mentioned for the indie company of a community, or like this is like something that only indie companies went to?
No, it was open for everyone, and there was usually also employees from the large companies attending, the ones that are more interested in the indie scene, I imagine. There was many old employees from larger companies attending these events.
I see. And wow, that's very nice.
Because then, you know, sometimes it could be that I think it's always important to have different perspectives, different point of view. So someone who's only worked in AAA games might have something to bring to the table that is different from someone who's always worked on their own or a very small studio.
Yeah. Oh, that's very, very insightful. Irene, I still have a lot of questions on my notebooks right now, but our time is running out. Yes, already almost an hour. So, time flies really fast. So the last question, I think this is for closing. Do you have any tips or maybe some like something that you can share from your experience to all the new developers who want to join into the industry?
Sure. I would say networking is essential. Right now it's a bit difficult with Corona, but you can always find some online places to meet people and keep in touch. On Discord and on social media, I think Twitter right now it's a great place for networking. And as soon as life goes back to normal, I would say go to events. If you're a shy person and you don't know anybody, I mean, there's always someone you can go with, like a friend, even if they're not into games, but maybe it's gonna make you feel more comfortable to go to these events. Volunteering, all these events usually need people who help out. So that's a great opportunity to meet the organizers, and organizers usually know everybody else. So I think this is super important for anyone who wants to work in the games industry. then I think it's super important to do what you like, and try to do more of that, even though if it's not your main job, but try to, you know, base your hobby or your pastime into improving the things that you actually love to do more. And eventually it might be a time where you can apply these learnings into your job. And something else, I think it's important to know a little bit of everything. And so, for example, I don't like programming. I don't like coding, but I am learning a little bit C sharp, because I feel like even if I don't want to do it as my main job, I think it's going to be important at some point in my life, if I want to open my own studio, for example, that I know how to read the line of code, even if I'm not the one coding, but I want to understand what this says and be able to give feedback to my colleagues. So the same goes the other way around. If you're a programmer, but you don't know about art or marketing, it's useful to just have a basic knowledge or understand a little bit what the other parts of a studio are doing so that you can communicate better. And in general, get outside of your comfort zone and try new things. And play a lot of games, especially the games that that you like, you know, the genres you like the most, or you would like to work on the most. Play all of them.
All right, that's really, really nice tips, guys. So don't forget to network, do volunteer, because that's the access for you to know everybody. And then follow your passion, know a little bit of everything, try to understand the other department doing. Get out of comfort zone and also play games. Irene, thank you very much for sharing all this amazing story with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Adam. It was really exciting.
Yes, and that's it for today. I hope this session can give you insight and courage to press start. Start your career as a game developer. I am Adam Arisa Smita. Keep playing games. Start making games. Thank you, Irene. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.